No problem.
Okay, so I'll just reiterate that the call to order was set at 9:01 and all four members have acknowledged being present. Thanks, Christian.
You're welcome. So next we have our Pledge of Allegiance. Sherry, do you have a flag?
Yeah, let's see if I can share. Share screen? Nope. I need you to let me share.
Oh, sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
Let's see. More. I'm going to make you the host briefly, and then you can pass it back to me.
Okay. Okay. Ready, guys? I pledge allegiance to the United States of America
and to the republic
for which it stands,
one nation
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all. Okay, so let me stop the share and pass it back to you, Lisa.
Okay.
More make host.
Great, thank you. Okay, let me. Perfect. Do you have any other items on your agenda?
Nope, you're it.
Okay, are you ready? For me then?
1 second. I just need an approval for the agenda. Oh. Do I have a motion?
Thank you.
I'll make the motion to approve the agenda as is. Can I have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, John. All in favor by roll. Christian? Aye. John?
Aye.
Wilma?
Aye.
Sean?
Aye.
Just a side note, Sherry, on this agenda, we still have the old members listed, the one I'm looking at.
Okay. I will get that cleaned up again.
I know, but it's a template, so I'm not worried, but I was just kind of like.
Yeah, nope. We're okay with the clerical piece. I will remedy that. Thank you.
Of course. All right. Miss Lisa, you are it.
Great, thank you. Well, good morning. I'm going to share my screen. Let's see. And how's that? Can you see it in presentation mode?
Yes, good job.
Great, thank you. I'm getting better. You know, of course, we're going to all go back in person. I'm not going to need any of the skills I've learned during the pandemic, but this is. Presenting online has been one thing I've had to learn how to do. So good morning. I think I've met you all before, but for those of you who have not met, I'm Lisa Kaur. I'm one of the partners at Young, Mini, and Kaur. I understand that all of you have had extensive Brown Act training before, and so this is a refresher and probably a required part of your charter. And so I appreciate you giving up part of your Saturday for me. I will keep it as brief as possible. If I'm going too fast or if I'm not loud enough, just stop me. You do not have to be polite around me. Give me a yell. Or if there's a question, if I say something and you're thinking that's not what we do, just stop me, give a holler, and we'll take a little bit longer on something if need be. But I'm going to plan to move very, very quickly because I know you've got a long honey-do list, Jerry. So I'm going to get you through it. Okay, so as always, we're going to start with the purpose of the act, then we're going to talk about what is a meeting under the Brown Act. We're going to talk about the notice requirements, public participation requirements in meeting, closed sessions, and then we're going to always end on a high note. What do we do if we screw up? So let's start with the purpose of the act. And of course, the purpose of the act is to ensure that members of the public have an opportunity to watch you do business. I like this quote from the Brown Act. I love the last sentence. The people insist on remaining informed so that they retain control over the instruments they've created. You are the instrument that they have created, this public charter school board. And as a result of that, as a result of you receiving public funding, they have an opportunity to watch you do business. They don't have an opportunity to take over your board meeting. It is not a public forum in the way of like a town hall meeting. They just have the opportunity to watch you do business. And they have the opportunity along the way to participate in a formal way, and we'll talk about their public participation rights in just a moment. The Brown Act applies to all meetings of the board, and you can see here on my slide, the basic definition of a meeting is one that you probably understand inherently. It is when a congregation of the majority of the members of the board meet to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take any action on charter school business. That's, you know, that always to me seems like an obvious definition, except for if you think about here, anytime a majority of your board is together and they even hear school business, somebody comes up to you and starts talking to you, you actually are holding a meeting, and members of the public are meant to have notice of that meeting and the opportunity to attend that meeting as well and watch you do business. And so members of the board always have to be really cautious when they are out together in public. If a majority of you are out together, you have to be cautious as to even what people come up to you and talk to you about, because you could be depriving another member of the public of their opportunity to watch you engage in business. Board committees also have to comply with the Brown Act. There is one exception to the rule regarding committees in the Brown Act, and that is an advisory committee that is composed of only board members. So if there was a committee made up of less than a quorum of the board, so if it was just two of you on a committee and it was advisory in nature only, and it wasn't a standing committee, it was an ad hoc committee, that would not have to comply with the Brown Act. All other committees have to comply with the Brown Act. There are exceptions to the rule of open meetings, and that is a majority of the board can attend another body's public meeting. So you could attend a school district board meeting or a county office board meeting without it being a meeting of your school that you have to agendize. You can attend like a California Charter Schools Association conference or other public conference of general interest. You can go to parties or graduations, as long as while you are at these events, you are not discussing charter school business. So if you're sitting around at graduation and someone starts discussing the school dress code, that would be considered a meeting at which members of the public would have an opportunity to attend. And so you have to be cautious. You have to keep the conversations light to, you know, things, fun things like COVID or, you know, Game of Thrones or something like that.
Lisa, I've got a question for you.
Please.
I work for Lassen Union High School District. I go to their board meetings. If they're in there talking about Long Valley Charter School, do I have to leave or?
No, you don't. You do not. If a majority of you were at the meeting attending, even if they start talking about your school, you are fine. If you start talking about your school and a majority of you are there, then you're holding a board meeting. Does that make sense? So sometimes if we think that a majority of us are going to be attending another entity's board meeting, and we do think that we might have an obligation at that meeting to also start discussing our school business, we might, as a matter of caution, agendize our own board meeting for that purpose. So but members of the public know we're going to be there and we might be discussing school business.
So then if they bring something up that I know is not true, do I just let it go or do I get on my soapbox?
If you're on your own, you have full power on your own as a citizen and a member of the public to correct them. You're on your own. If a majority of you are together, then you have to be a little bit more cautious.
Okay. John, are you trying to tell us something?
Well, I'm just putting it out there that working for the public school, I hear all the time about how charter schools are this and that, whatever, you know, and you know, it's hard me not to say anything, but then I don't want to get into a lengthy discussion with them because they obviously don't know what's going on.
Right.
But he can speak as a member of the public without any hesitation, right? In that scenario,
absolutely. That's absolutely right. As a you are a member of the public in there. You are not. You are as an individual board member. You don't have any power or authority as a board member unless you're sitting as a majority.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
No problem. Or unless the board has delegated some responsibility to you to be the spokesperson. in the situation that you've described, you're fine to refute myths about charter schools. And then, of course, a lot of us have to do that on a daily basis. So,
Thank you. Because
you've all done training before, you all probably recognize the term serial meetings. And serial meetings are meetings that accidentally occur because we've been discussing amongst board members, school business, between individuals. And serial meetings can occur through a series of individual communications, you involve a full quorum of the board through either a chain or with one person being the hub. So if Christian calls Jerry and says, I want to change the dress code, and Jerry says, yeah, I agree with that, let me call Wilma. All of a sudden we've held a board meeting accidentally because we've done it through a series of communications. Or if Jerry calls Christian, Jerry calls Wilma, boom, board meeting has occurred, again, accidentally. That's called a serial meeting. And that is also considered a meeting under the Brown Act, for which members of the public should have had the opportunity to attend and watch you conduct business. Of course, in this day and age, these types of communications more often occur via email or text message or even social media. Sometimes we'll see a board member post out to a charter school page, and then we see other board members responding in comments. Well, they've actually just held a board meeting accidentally on social media. And so we want to be very cautious with our use of technology and avoid emailing one another. My famous example is I was sitting at a board meeting where there was probably 200-300 parents there because the school was considering raising its class size. Members of the public were very anxious about this. And the board president opened up the discussion, and he was very, I think, nervous. And he said, I'm so grateful that to see all these parents here, nobody ever comes to our meeting. So I'm so happy you're all coming to participate. I know how my fellow board members feel about the class size increase. I'm eager to hear how you feel. Well, what's wrong with that statement? He should have no idea what the other board members feel like about the class size increase, because if he does, that means they were holding a meeting without the members of the public present, right? And so, of course, as their attorney, I was like, you know, symbolically in my head, I was hitting my head against the desk. Members of the public didn't pick up on the problem. It was fine. But it just sort of goes to show you, it's a good example of, you know, you should, the legislature goes out of its way in the Brown Act to say you should be showing up fresh to these meetings and having your discussions and learning what your fellow board members feel at the board meeting and not beforehand. Now, does this mean that you can have no email communication? It doesn't. Usually we utilize our executive director to communicate things out to the board that they might need to know between board meetings. So for example, if there was an accident on campus, Sherry might let you all know, but if she's going to do that, my suggestion is always that there is a big header that says one-way communication only, do not respond, because if you all start replying all, that's when we start having a board meeting accidentally.
I usually have not a big header, but please reply individually to me, not to the group. Don't reply all. And
or don't reply.
we have not had any errors on that. Everybody's right on that one.
In fact, the legislature, with regard to serial meetings, they made it even stricter. They realized that there were some boards, some public boards that are 50, 60 members, and you can have a lot of communication before you hit that quorum. And so they even tightened it up further, and they said one member of the board or even officer of the board cannot tell another member of the board what they're thinking. So what that means is if Sherry had a conversation with Christian about the dress code, she could have a conversation with you, Jerry, but she can't share what Christian is feeling. So she can say, Jerry, you know, the dress code is on the agenda, and you can say, yeah, this is how I feel. She can't say Christian agrees with you. She can't share that because she's now connected you, and that is considered a meeting under the Brown Act. So they've really gone out of their way to try to limit the amount of communication that occurs outside of board meetings. So, it wasn't until a couple of years ago that the Charter Schools Act was actually amended to be very clear that the Brown Act actually does apply to charter schools. Most of our charters obligated ourselves to the Brown Act already, and it was assumed that the Brown Act applied, but it wasn't until a couple of years ago that it was specific. And when the Charter Schools Act was updated, it specified where you are meant to hold a board meeting. And there are multiple options under the Charter Schools Act, and you actually fall under two of those options. You are a non-classroom-based charter school that operates resource centers in more than one county, which requires you to meet within the county in which the majority of your students are enrolled. And so that, of course, is in Lassen County. And then you also are a governing board that manages one or more charter schools located within the same county. And so either way, under this test, you fall within holding your meetings somewhere within Lassen County. Before we had these laws, it was not clear what the charter school's jurisdiction was for holding board meetings, and this has clarified it. Of course, during COVID, we are holding our board meetings mostly by telephone conference, and I'll discuss in just a moment that that has been allowed very clearly by executive order of our governor. But in non-COVID times, there are very strict rules for holding board meetings via telephone conference or even one board member participating in the board meeting via telephone. If you are participating in a board meeting via telephone during non-COVID times, the agenda has to be posted at your telephone conference location. The telephone conference location actually has to be identified in the notice and agenda. So we have to know ahead of time where you'll be participating from so that we can post the agenda, and the agenda has to have that location. All votes during that time have to be taken by roll call so that it's there's no head shaking or hands raised. Each location that a board member participates from has to be accessible to the public so that they could attend from that location. So if they know Jerry's participating from his home, and hey, actually, I live closer to Jerry than I do the school, I'll just go to Jerry's house and participate in the meeting. It has to be ADA accessible for that purpose. And members of the public actually have to be able to participate from that location. So they need to be able to hear the meeting and actually address the board from that location as well. So sort of speakerphone accesses would be required. And in non-COVID times, a quorum of the board has to be located somewhere within the county. And that is so that members of the public can actually go and participate in the board meeting from those locations. So those are during non-COVID times. You could see that it would be impossible for a board member to participate from a moving vehicle, which is typically the most common thing that occurs, is that a board member might say, I'm going to be very, very late to this board meeting and I'd like to participate via phone. Can I? The answer is that they can call in, listen to the board meeting as a member of the public would be able to do so, but they cannot actually participate and be counted as present as a board member or even vote. So they can't count for quorum for that board meeting. Why? Because we couldn't post the agenda on their car unless it was magnetic, and we can't make cars ADA accessible and open to the public. And of course, we couldn't actually identify the location, like somewhere on the 405, we can't do something like that. So the governor's executive order allowed for a lot more flexibility with regard to telephone conferencing. And so it doesn't require posting at all telephone conference locations. It doesn't require that you open your homes to members of the public or that they be ADA accessible, and you don't have to be within the county in order to participate. And so these flexibilities continue as long as your state or local health officials are recommending social distancing measures. So I would imagine that we will have this flexibility well through the summer months, but it might be that by the time the next school year rolls around that we might be back into in-person meetings.
So Lisa, can I ask a clarification?
Please.
In non-COVID times,
yes.
It says the quorum needs to be meeting in Lassen County at the same physical location?
No, not at the same physical location.
Okay.
Good question. Just at locations where members of the public could participate. And in non-COVID times also, you would have to open up each of your school sites as
right.
a place where also members could participate via telephone conference as well.
Right. And we had done that up till COVID.
And uniquely, charter schools have that obligation to open up each of their facilities for board meetings, whereas a school district doesn't have to do that. So when the school district meets, it doesn't have to open up a telephone conference location at every elementary and high school in their district. Charter schools do. So this is sort of an example of the chipping away of the flexibility of charter schools that has occurred over the last probably 10 years. The governor's executive order should stay in place for a while, and we should continue to have this flexibility. And it may be that board meetings have been so successful via Zoom, and I think members of the public actually appreciate attending your board meetings in their pajamas, that we might see some amendments to the Brown Act occurring in the future. So now that we know what a board meeting is, we need to know, how do we provide members of the public notice that a board meeting is occurring so that they can make an educated decision as to whether or not they actually want to attend? Well, the notice obligations are different depending upon the type of the meeting. Our regular meetings, which is our meetings that we schedule in the normal course of business ahead of time, typically at our annual meeting, we might say our meetings are on the first Tuesday of every month, for example. Those require 72 hours notice and a posting of the agenda at 72 hour notices. Our meetings that occur between our regular meetings to deal with one or two items that we can't wait for our next regular meeting only require 24 hours notice posting. And then our very, very rare emergency meetings only require 1 hour notice. And you can see the definition of emergency meetings are very, very narrow. I like to say, if you have an emergency meeting, the Brown Act is usually the last thing on your mind. In my 23 years, I had not had an emergency meeting necessity, except for when a school had a sewage pipe burst. And it sort of blew up the school. And I was like, yeah, that qualifies. And then, of course, we had the fires in Paradise that occurred. And then we rolled right into COVID. And of course, we saw more emergency meetings. But typically, if we can avoid an emergency meeting, we will. And I always try to tell my clients, just take it out of your lingo. Because we get a lot of calls, hey, we need to fire a kindergarten teacher. We need to have an emergency meeting. And I'm like, no, you're not having an emergency meeting. You're having a special meeting, not an emergency meeting. So where do we have to post? We post at our school locations. So at each of your locations, you should post physically, and you wanna make sure that it's in a location that is available 24/7, so that members of the public would have an opportunity to ride by and see your agenda if they don't have online access to your agenda. You also have to post on your website in a prominent direct link on your homepage. And so it can't be buried deep. School districts still, I feel like you have to dig really, really deep on a lot of their websites to find their agenda. And because of that, The legislature amended recently to say, no, it has to be on your homepage, direct link to your agenda, so that members of the public don't have to go on a hunt to find that you are actually having a board meeting. Members of the public can do an annual request for an ongoing notice of your agendas, in which case you would have to mail it to them. And then special board meetings require 24 hours written notice to each local newspaper and radio or TV station if they have requested that notice. So, and they would have to also renew that request every year annually as well. The general rule is that if it's not on our agenda, we can't discuss it. We can't take action on it. So the notice is providing that opportunity to the members of the public to say, hey, this is what we're going to be talking about. You can come to our meeting and hear us talk about it. If we talk about something that's not on our agenda, then we're depriving members of the public with that opportunity to come and hear us speak because they didn't know that it was going to be on the agenda. That there is no description requirement, like length in the Brown Act. It's usually brief, usually just enough to give members of the public that ability to make an educated decision as to whether they want to attend. I've had clients where I looked at their agenda and it just said things like budget, curriculum. That's not enough. Enough, it has to be a bit more descriptive so that members of the public know, what are you doing with the curriculum? Are you adopting a new curriculum? What are you doing with your budget? Are you amending it? What are you doing? You also have to ensure in your agenda that you describe to members of the public how they can request the documents that are going to be distributed to the board in advance of the meeting or during the meeting, and also how they can request a disability-related accommodation if one is needed. There are exceptions to the notice rule where there are times where a board can discuss items that are not on the agenda. And that is when a majority of the board determines that an emergency situation exists. Emergency being that very, very narrow definition that I provided on the prior slide. With an emergency situation and a majority vote, you could add an item to your agenda. Also, you can add an item to your agenda if by 2/3 votes, so a supermajority of the board can vote to say that there is a need to take immediate action and that that need for action came to the attention of the entirety of the charter school after the agenda was already posted. And so what that means is Sherry couldn't have also known about the need for the item. And so these are also very rare exceptions because usually Sherry knew, but maybe she didn't remember to put it on the agenda or somebody else within the school knew. And so it is pretty unique. Occasionally we find that these issues will pop up, like a contract that needs to be approved by the board at the very last minute. Usually if we know before your regular board meeting, but within that 72-hour posting period, but more than a day before, if we know you have another item that you need to add to your agenda, what we will typically do is we'll suggest that you post a special board meeting agenda on top of your regular board meeting so that you'll open and close your regular meeting and then just roll into a special board meeting afterwards to tackle those last items. So other than these exceptions, we're only discussing items that are on our agenda so that members of the public have an opportunity to know that they want to attend your board meeting and listen to the items to be discussed. What that also means is that if members of the public come and in open session, when public comment comes up, if they discuss items that are not on your agenda, we don't have the ability to respond to them and provide responses that we so badly want to. Hang on one second. My large puppy has banged his way into the room and is being disruptive. I'm gonna just throw him out of the room real quickly. I'm assuming that my husband didn't realize that he had done that. And sometimes he sits quietly, but he was starting to be chatty. So I apologize for that. Okay, so now members of the public, they've come to your board meeting. What rights do they have once they get there? At your regular board meetings, members of the public have a right to speak on all of your agenda items, and they also have a right to speak on items that are not on your agenda but are within the jurisdiction of the board. Your special board meetings, they are limited only to speaking to items that are on your agenda. They don't have the right at special board meetings to just talk in general as to items that are not on your agenda. Again, when they are talking about items that are not on your agenda, you don't have the ability to say anything other than thank you or next, or not say anything at all, or you can ask a clarifying question, or you can direct your executive director to follow up with them. Best practice is to keep your comments back to them pretty limited, so that we're not then potentially conducting business on an item that's not on our agenda. We can set time limitations for public comment, and it's a good idea to do so. Typical time limit might be 3 minutes for public comment, but if you have 200 people in the audience, your board president could say, I'm going to limit public comment to 1 minute or 30 seconds or the entirety of public comment to 20 minutes in order to allow the meeting to go forward efficiently. So you can set reasonable time limits during the meetings. Members of the public, when they address the board, they can be very insulting. They can be even slanderous. So they can defame folks up in their public comment. But they can't be disruptive. And so if they are screaming, if they are yelling, if they are cursing, if they are threatening, we can ask them to stop. We can control their behavior, but we can't control their message. So we can say, we don't yell. We speak respectfully to one another. We don't curse during public comment. And if a member of the public is threatening, the best practice is to stop the meeting and connect with law enforcement if need be. Now, as far as speakers who are just being nasty, somebody that comes up and says, I want to tell you that Sherry, she's a horrible person. She stole $20 million from the school and it's just off her, and just goes off. Now, what is the right there? A lot of boards will try to stop the member of the public from speaking, but actually we just have to allow them to speak. And what happens is that Sherry would have a right to bring a defamation claim against this person for publicly defaming her. And so even though it's awful, members of the public can come up and they can make awful claims about each one of you. But if they're doing so in a calm voice and non-threatening manner, we really can't control the content of their comments. Now, with our virtual meetings, we have found a lot of very interesting things that have occurred. A lot of people will shout out during virtual meetings because they're under the guise that they could turn their camera off. And so it is best typically to keep members of the public their cameras off and them on mute, and that we only allow them to unmute when they are called for public comment. So a lot of times we will have members of the public have to register for public comment ahead of time so that we know and we can unmute them for their public comment time. Still, we have found some really funny things that have occurred during virtual meetings. So I was at one board meeting and things were very contentious. And what members of the public did, because they couldn't shout out, is they kept changing their background, their virtual background, to really horrible insults about the school. And some of them even did it as like a slideshow. And so I was speaking and I could see them, calling me names and slideshow. It was pretty interesting and very, very, very clever. But we do want to make sure that we're maintaining control, remembering that we are meeting in public. We are not necessarily holding a town hall public meeting. We can allow members of the public to record and broadcast. They don't even have to ask for permission because it is a public meeting. They can do so. They don't have to even tell you that they're doing that. It's not unusual for board members to find that they're on YouTube in their public meetings. And that they had no idea that members of the public were recording the board meetings. We cannot hold a meeting anywhere where there is a condition of attendance, like so where somebody has to sign in order to get there or pay a cover charge. Of course, we can't do anything like that. And of course, the facilities have to be completely ADA accessible. So we're not holding our board meetings at the top of a 6-floor building without an elevator. We do have to provide reasonable accommodations for our board meetings. And so that could mean providing a sign language interpreter or providing someone to assist in reading the materials for the visually impaired. But members of the public who need an accommodation have to provide us with reasonable notice. And we provide them in the agenda instructions on how to request that accommodation. Members of the public are given any writings that go to you, any documentation that goes to you at the same time as it goes to you. So if you have the document, members of the public also have a right to that document at the same time. And our agendas have instructions on how they can request those materials as well. A lot of schools have gone to posting their agenda with direct links so that members of the public can get the documents just off the website so that we're not having to send documents out to members of the public. They can just access them as long as they have internet capability. Okay, so now we know what the rights of the public are. We know of the notice requirements. Now we want to talk about what are the permissible closed sessions. Well, the legislature recognizes that there are times where a board is not going to be able to conduct their business under the purview of the public because there is a need for some level of confidentiality or ability of the board to speak with candor. And to do so, the legislature has given you like specific keys to go behind closed doors and closed session. If there is not a right under the Brown Act to go into closed session, then we are not able to do so. So the permissible closed sessions that are most applicable to public schools are any pending or anticipated litigation. Under this closed session allowance, you are allowed to go into closed session with your legal counsel in order to receive attorney-client privileged advice. So you aren't able to hold this closed session unless you have an attorney there giving you advice, because it is protecting your right to get that confidential advice. Your attorney can be either on the phone or video or in person, but it can't be just a letter. School districts have gotten in trouble in the past for going into closed session with just an opinion letter from their attorney. The protection is actually the advice. We can also go into closed session to discuss pupil discipline. Why? Because the education code provides a very specific allowance to do so to protect that confidential student information. So here is one exception that doesn't come out of the Brown Act. It actually comes out of the education code, and it's protecting confidential student information. This would also apply more broadly to even pupil record challenges, because we are putting the priority on the confidence of the student record over the rights of the public, because our students have such strict confidentiality rights as to their records. We also most commonly go into closed session to discuss personnel items. We can go into closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, evaluation, discipline, dismissal of employees. Notice that salary setting is not within the closed session list of items for which we go into closed session, because our employees are public employees. Our salaries have to be set in open session. And so A plus following of the Brown Act means that we are actually choosing who we're hiring in closed session, but we are going into open session to actually set salaries and confirm the contract, because members of the public do have a right to see those contracts. Now, the one caveat and exception to our right to go into closed session regarding personnel is that if we are going into closed session to hear complaints or charges against a public employee, we have an obligation under the law to provide that employee 24 hours notice, and they have a right to request that those complaints or charges are actually heard in open session. So it's their right, if they feel like they might get public support, it's their right to sort of air that dirty laundry in open session if they wish. So it's not a right to have the member, to have the item not heard at all. It's just a right to have it heard in open session. This is not very common because typically a complaint or a charge against your employees is going to be heard by Sherry, your executive director. She is going to investigate that and she might bring back to you a recommendation for discipline, dismissal, or release of the employee, but you're not actually hearing the complaints or the charges. And so typically the only time this will occur for a charter school board is when it is a complaint or a charge against their executive director, in which case the board is actually live hearing that complaint or charge and deciding how to move forward with investigating. So that notice would go to your executive director. The board can go into closed session to discuss real estate negotiations. The board has a right to go into closed session to discuss the price or terms of any real estate lease or purchase. Why? Because the legislature recognizes if you were discussing that in open session, the owners of the property would ratchet up the price on you because they now know that you're interested in it. And so you have the ability to go into closed session with your real estate negotiator. Who is that real estate negotiator? It's whoever you have assigned in open session. So that could be your executive director, it could be a real estate agent, it could be an attorney, it's up to you. You can also go into closed session to discuss labor negotiations. You are not a collective bargaining school at the moment, but if your school were to engage in union negotiations, you could do so in closed session with your labor negotiator. Again, assigning an open session who your labor negotiator is. And then another fairly common closed session exception for schools is matters of public security, meeting in closed session with a public security officer that might be fire marshal or police officer, district attorney, et cetera. So when we go into closed session, the legislature has actually given us the agenda language for closed session so that you're not actually revealing in the agenda the information that we're trying to protect. It's called safe harbor language. Basically, the legislature says, here, use this language and you will be safe and you will not violate the Brown Act by doing so. We can never start or end our meeting with a closed session because before the closed session, the board president has to make a public announcement of the reasons we're going into closed session by reading out the agenda items that we are going into closed session. Members of the public have a right to make public comment on those items before we go into closed session. And then after closed session, we have to go back into open session and we have to announce out every item in which we discussed, or I'm sorry, in which we took action on in closed session. And we have to report out the vote or abstention of every board member during that time. So we can't have any cloak of secrecy in closed session as to the actions we take. Every one of your votes will be reported out and just also shown within the minutes. The board decides who goes into closed session with them because anybody that goes into closed session is bound by the strict confidentiality of closed session. We don't take minutes in closed session. And so if you invite Sherry into closed session, which I'm sure you often do, she is also bound by the same confidentiality. The only time a member of the board or another attending closed session member is able to breach that confidentiality is if the board directed them to. So for example, if you directed me to engage in a settlement discussion, I can go out of closed session and engage in settlement discussion without breaching the confidentiality rules of the Brown Act. So one last piece is that the Brown Act has recently been adjusted to limit the use of special board meetings. We can only approve our CEO or executive director's compensation at a regular board meeting. So we have to plan our contracting really carefully to make sure that our renewal of our contracts of our executive director occur at regular, not special board meetings. This is because of what happened down in South in Southern California, the city of Bell, the members of the public woke up to find that at a special board meeting, the city had given all of their big public officials major increases in salary overnight. And there was a big criminal investigation as a result of what occurred. And so now the Brown Act is really clear that we are setting these salaries for our executive director in open session. And so you can see in the slide, the board has a very formal report out when they are approving the contract for their executive director in open session, which includes not just the salary, but the fringe benefits. And there's a whole report as to how that is an appropriate salary rate as well. And we work with our clients to make sure that they have the appropriate reporting in advance of the regular board meeting. So how does a member of the public complain? What happens if we screw up on the Brown Act? Well, it's it's one of those areas that is not the worst thing in the world. Now, if one of the board members was found to have intentionally deprived a member of the public of their rights under the Brown Act, there could be criminal penalties that occur. In my career, I have only seen that occur once, and it was with a school district board member that had been found to intentionally deprive a member of their rights under the Brown Act, a member of the public of their rights. But it's very, very unusual that it occurs. More typically, what we see with regard to the Brown Act and charter schools is that we see the authorizer calling out the charter school for a Brown Act violation and providing them with a notice of concern, in which we have to actually show a cure as to what we're going to do to correct our Brown Act violations. Sometimes, if the school district has it in for one of their charter schools, they will use the Brown Act as a tool to try to revoke the charter school, because the Brown Act is a law and charters can be revoked for a violation of the law. Thankfully, the law requires that we have an opportunity to cure before we can be revoked. Under the Brown Act itself, there is an opportunity for members of the public or the district attorney to report a Brown Act violation, and we have an obligation to respond within 30 days or to cure. The majority of these types of complaints are resolved by some form of corrective action, either taking the action again or doing some training or both. So not the worst thing in the world. Questions? Look, I got you done within less than an hour, so.
You rock.
I'm feeling good about that. any questions that I didn't address along the way?
Not that I can think of.
Great. You guys all have this down pat. I know. I've worked with you so many years. It's good seeing you all. And I know you probably have to close out your meeting. And so, Sherry, do you want me to make you the host so you can do so?
That's perfect. Thanks, Lisa. And thank you for sharing some of the COVID related. That was, though we've talked about it amongst ourselves,
of course,
it was good to have that piece in there to just kind of remind us what we're doing now that we won't be doing in the future.
Right. Where you have the flexibility now, but, and you probably will go out of social distancing restrictions before anybody else, and so it will be worth you keeping an eye on those local rules.
Yep. Thank you so much for using your Saturday with us.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Nice to see you. Take care.
Good seeing you.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Alrighty. On that note, thank you all for being here, and we will adjourn at 9:51.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Glad we got this in the can, right? So
yes.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Good.
Bye. Hasta la vista.
Bye-bye.